Okay, well, this morning I will be giving the class. And again, this is a class. And as such, you know, we, the ones that give lesson, always appreciate any feedback, any questions, because it is a class. So, I will occasionally call on you if nobody talks. I will pick you out. I know a lot of people like to just wait and nobody answers, and so we answer for you. Well, I kind of want to participate, so you will participate. Alright, I have a question for y'all. To you, personally, what do you think was one of Jesus' greatest attributes or qualities, you could put it that way? What is he really known for a lot of times? He has a lot of them. Which one to you stands out the most?
Being a perfect example.
Being a perfect example, that's actually a very good one. I heard somebody else say something else over here. His compassion. Very good. That's actually kind of, that was the one I was looking for. But yes, his compassion and his love. Now, Jesus was known for his love. Is that right? I mean, so great was his love that what did he do for us? Gave himself up for us. And not just a very simple death either, a very cruel and terrible way. But he did it for us because he has love towards us, his compassion towards us. Now, Jesus' love, who did it extend to?
Everyone.
Everyone. Sometimes people kind of forget that nowadays. Jesus' love extends to everybody. It doesn't matter where you're from. It doesn't matter your social status. Whether you're man or woman, child, young, old, rich, poor, Jesus' love extends to everybody. When he died on that cross for us, he did it for you, for me, for everybody that came before and everybody that will come after. That's his love towards us. Now, we are called what? I heard it. Somebody speak up.
Christians.
What does that mean? What is a Christian? What does the term Christian mean?
Christ.
I heard it again. What was that?
Christ.
Disciple of Christ?
Like Christ.
So as such, we should be like Christ. Try to imitate him in a way that we are supposed to love everyone. Is that true? We should have compassion towards everybody. I mean, one of the biggest things that I got out of when I was growing up in church was drilled into me, and that people kind of look for and kind of expect is when you go to church, that it should be a place full of love, compassion, friendliness. You should feel welcome. You should feel wanted. It should feel like a home. True? It should feel like you can walk into that place with any problem you have and somebody will be there willing to help you. Whether it's by listening or doing whatever they can. Now sadly, sometimes that's not always the case. It's hard. Reason is, why? We're human. We're not perfect. The only perfect one was, as Kelly was said, Christ. Now, even so, Christ was very compassionate. Christ showed his love for everybody. Were there times though that people would think maybe Christ wasn't as compassionate as people would say? Maybe he wasn't as loving as you would think? Can you think of a situation? He threw people out of the temple. Another time?
He
called people out, which, you know, sometimes it needs to be done. There's another situation, which is what we're going to touch on. You remember Jesus helping a Canaanite woman whose daughter was sick? Do you remember that story? Everybody turn to Mark. Actually, start Matthew. Matthew 15, verses 21 through 28. And then somebody else look up Mark 7, 24 through 30. Mark 7, 24 through 30. If anybody has the first one, go ahead and read it. Matthew 15, 21 through 28.
Jesus went out to Mary,
and somebody else, Mark 7.
There he arose and went to the region of Tyre and Sidon. Entered a house, and when no one knew it, they did not begin to. For a woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him, and she came out and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by birth, and she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And Jesus said to her, let the children be filled first, for it is not good to take the children to the end of the road and take them off. She answered and said to him, yes, Lord, that he will do all that you have taken from the children of Christ. And he said to her, from this saying, though your demon has gone out of your daughter. And when she had come to her house, she found the demon gone out of her daughter, wide in the bed.
Thank you. So what do we have here? The situation we have here is there's a desperate mother whose child is sick, says it's demon-possessed. And she's begging Christ for his help. Now, the part where we're looking at where Jesus might not have shown very much compassion at first, because he does heal her. He does help with expelling the demon from the daughter. But the part is, verse 23 says, but he answered her not a word. So imagine this. Jesus is walking along. Maybe there's a crowd with him, it doesn't really say. But he has his apostles with him. And then here comes this woman. I imagine she's probably hysterical, or at least very persistent, begging Christ to help her, turning to the only person she knows that can help her. And Christ keeps walking along as she begs, pleads, possibly cries. At one point she bows down before him. But Christ ignores her. You would think a man that's known for his love and his compassion would immediately be like, yes, okay, let's go. Or just simply say the word and the demon was gone, which is eventually what happened. But he didn't. He ignored her at first. He kept walking. Even the apostles urged Christ to send her away and tell her, go away. Even they are supposed to be known, they were his disciples. Shouldn't they also be compassionate towards other people in need? You know, if you see something, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think this is probably a teaching point that Jesus would later let them know that the gospel was first preached to the Jews and then to the Gentiles. The Gentiles were never forgotten. He said, let the children be filled first. He hadn't forgotten them. I think maybe this is a teaching point.
Very good. You're jumping ahead of me there, Larry, but thank you. That's right. I think, no, that's perfect. That's what a class is for. But yes, the reason he ignored her first, there's several reasons. First of all, Jesus was there to help, as Larry said, who first? The Jews. That's why he came here. I mean, yes, Christ was supposed to come and die for everybody. But he had a purpose when he was here first. He was here to help who? God's people, who were the Jews. Now, as Larry pointed out, does that mean he was going to forget everybody else? He was going to forget us? No. But everything had its time. Now, all of us here, is anybody here a Jew? Could you say you're a Jew? Yes? No? No. We're all considered Gentile. So, Christ came here for all of us. He was going to be here. But at that moment, he was there for the Jews first. He had come to help them out. Now, the second reason that he kind of ignored the woman. What's another reason? First of all, the woman was from where?
She's a Canaanite.
She's a Canaanite. What's so significant about that?
Canaanites came from the Jews intermarrying with non-Jews.
Okay. Now, what else is significant about? Okay, she's a Gentile. Still looking for that particular answer. This one might be one I have to tell you. Don, do you have any idea? Don's probably my best bet, knowing why. No? Okay. Now, did the Jews and the Canaanites ever say, hang out, put it that way? Did they?
They have a history.
They have a history. They do. It wasn't a very good one either. That's right. So, it wasn't a very good relationship, let's put it that way, between the Canaanites and the Jews. So here's a Canaanite woman begging a Jewish man for help. Now, that's very significant for the reason Donna mentioned. There wasn't a very good relationship between them for many years, for a long time. They just didn't get along. Jesus was just pointing out, he wasn't being disrespectful. He said the term, throw it to his little dogs. You would think calling somebody a dog would be kind of disrespectful. What he was doing is he's just drawing attention to the fact that her people and the Jews did not have dealings with each other. They just didn't. They tried to avoid, more than likely they probably tried to avoid each other. But regardless of that, here's this woman, a desperate woman. Her child is in need, and she would do anything for help. And here's Jesus, a man who is supposed to be full of compassion, full of love, ignoring a woman whose child is in need. But again, as Larry pointed out, it was a teachable moment. He was showing the apostles that they were there first to help the Jews, but it doesn't mean the Gentiles would be forgotten. It doesn't mean that everybody else was going to be cast aside. It just means that everything had its time. Now, Jesus had made exceptions before, though. Give me an example of another time Jesus helped a Gentile throughout his ministry.
Centurions.
Say that again, Mike.
Centurions.
The centurion's
servant.
There's another person there, Gentile, who asked Jesus for help because his servant was sick, and Jesus helped them. They turn him away. They say, not right now, or too bad. No. He helped them out, even though he wasn't a Jew. So Jesus was here to help. But at this point, it was a teachable moment. Now, something I want to point out real quick, which we're going to touch on in a moment, is this woman's attitude towards all of this. Now remember, she was a Canaanite woman who, I don't know how she was raised. Maybe she was taught that Jews were terrible people, or Jews were her enemies, or maybe not. But the fact was that Canaanites and Jews just didn't get along. But she put all that aside because she needed help, because her daughter needed help. Now, I'm a parent. Many of you here are parents. Probably most of you here are parents. There's nothing you wouldn't do for your child. Is that right? I've always thought a love of a father and a love of a mother is slightly different. Maybe it's just me personally. I love my child, and I would do anything for him. I'd give my life for him. But there is a special bond between a mother and her child, something we as fathers probably could never understand. This is a life that grew inside of you for a long time. A life that you helped nurture. Now, maybe this woman didn't have a husband. Or maybe in her desperation, just went out on her own. We don't know. But the fact is, she was there looking for help. And her attitude towards all of this wasn't to look down on a Jew. But she put her pride aside, her beliefs, whatever it was, and insisted that Christ help her. She kept crying out towards him to the point that the apostles were getting tired of hearing her scream or hearing her yell and wanted her gone. And that's the type of persistence that we should have as Christians when it comes to things of the church. Now, we'll touch on that in a second. I just kind of want to get that out there. So, at this point, she keeps on insisting. She keeps on asking for help. And finally, what does Jesus do? Does he help her? What's the first thing he says to her? Abby, what she said? Was it?
The first thing
he says to her isn't, yes, I'm going to help you. No. The first thing he says to her says, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. But she kept insisting. She kept saying, please help me. I need help. What's the second thing he says to her? Abby just said it. He said, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. So the first two things he says to her, go ahead. So the first two things he says to her are not, let me help you or I'm going to go do it. First time he says, I'm not here for you. Second time she says, I'm not here for you again. Go ahead.
It's probably amazing that what he says, great is your faith. Again, we know that. But when she said in verse 22 of Matthew 15, thou son of David, being a Gentile, that indicates she identified with who he was. Even though she was a Gentile from the house of David. Now you wonder, did she know he was the Messiah? It doesn't say.
Right.
She certainly knew he was from the house of David. And you think about like the Samaritan woman in John 4. That's a woman that's not Jew either. She said, we know that Messiah is coming. The faith of this woman was not just emotional. It was based on some evidence. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Anyway, I think that's interesting. So there must be some test here of Jesus and her. Use her as an example to the Jewish people.
No. That's actually perfect. We're actually going there. And he does. Now, so the first two times he tells her basically no. That he's here for another purpose. But so great is her insistence and so great is her faith, she says to her. So verse 26 says, but he answered and said, it is not good to take the children's bread and to throw it to the little dogs. But what is her response? Her response is, and she said, yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from the master's table. So she accepts, I guess you could say, the criticism or whatever he was calling her. Yeah. She accepts that and still insists. Finally, what was Jesus' final response to her? It says, O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. After denying her twice, after even calling her a little dog, his final response was to praise her. Was to give her a compliment. And to fulfill her desire. It says, great is your faith. I just want you to think about this. I never really thought about this till last night. I was going through this. So great was her faith. So great was her belief that Christ could help and heal her. That it became an example. It became scripture. It was written in the scripture for us to learn about. For us to study and for us to take an example from. Never really thought about that. That this Canaanite woman, this Gentile woman...
One of the things I was thinking about was, you know, Jesus, even though he denied her, he never told her in the scriptures that we do go to actually go away. In fact, he let her stay there so long that it began to annoy his disciples. He never told her to go away. And I think that that's important. And I think another thing, maybe, when he said, he didn't just say, call her a dog, he called her a little dog, almost like a puppy.
Right.
They're cute, but you don't feed the puppies before you feed your children. So it's, I think there's some things even there that you can do as well that's just that's so perfect. And in Luke 18, about, you know, he says there's a parable that you're not always afraid of and not to use heart. In Luke 18, verse 7, it says, shall God have inches on the way to cry out?
That's right, perfect. I think Sister Evelyn?
Even though, you know, you may consider the term a little puppy as a disparaging term, like Brian said, it was a truth that she knew and understood.
Right.
And what I think is important is that she understood the truth of the fact that the Jews were God's chosen people, that there was something special God had done with the Jews. She knew this. She understood this. They were God's children. And we can look at it as disparaging or a term of endearment. However, what I think should be noted here is that it was true. Whatever Jesus said to her in the terms of her position as a Gentile was still a fact. It was just a fact of the matter the way that it is. And he was still willing to help her, of course, but he was supposed to be came for the Jews first. That was in prophecy, that was just the truth.
That's right.
Her willingness to accept that truth is a part of why she had the faith that she did.
That's right, very good point.
Yeah, our thing is, this is the second instance where the disciples are upset because of somebody being like, well, you know what he did with the children? Because they were bringing the children and people, the disciples were getting upset because they were, you know, whatever was going on. But he said, you have to be as a little child. So that's what I was thinking, you know, that the second instance where saying something to the disciples, his followers, were upset or what, you know, when, you know, upset because of the continual.
Right. There.
The Jews always had a problem. They always thought salvation was for them and only for them. Excuse me. I think you see this even until Acts 10 when Peter understood his vision. The gospel is for all. It was always Jeremiah 31, 31, 34. The new covenant that would be for all people, not just the Jews. I think the Jews in Jesus' day, even up till Acts, I think chapter 11, when they were scattered abroad about the persecution, it said they went about preaching to none but the Jews only. They still didn't understand. I think until Peter's vision that he began to understand, the gospel is for all. They just couldn't understand that. That God could have mercy and love for everybody, not just the Jews.
Right, and it would come later. Later. As a matter of fact, you have Paul, was known as the apostle of the Gentiles. That's right. But even he affirmed it, that Jesus came here first for the Jews, then the Gentiles. Now, at this point, this is a teaching moment. That's why Jesus did what he did. He ignored her. He, you could even say, maybe tried to dissuade her from insisting. But she insisted, which shows two things here. First of all, shows why Jesus was here. Second of all, it shows her faith. It tested the woman. Go ahead. No. Go ahead. It's a class. Everybody's willing to.
I find it interesting, especially the older I get as a Christian myself, that the word humble is associated with the word humility, which is the same word for humiliation. In our humiliation, as Paul would say with this thorn in the flesh, he was a proud Jew, a Pharisee of Pharisees, without attention. Paul would say, when I am weak, I am made strong. Here you have this Syrophoenician woman, this Gentile, begging the son of David. She's not going to give up. Through her humiliation, this great strength is shown. Which again, humbleness, meekness equals strength.
It does.
It's hard for us to understand that. You think about the Jews, the disciples here, what lesson they were going to learn as he helped her.
That's right. So all this was a great teachable moment.
The thing that I think about that is interesting to me is that you have this woman who is a Gentile, and she is one of the two people I believe that that Christ makes a point to say, you have great faith. And then I think of the centurion in Matthew 8, where he says, I have a servant that's about to die, and Christ, I believe, that no, you don't have to leave. You can basically say the word from here, and you'll be healed. And Christ again makes the point to say that he has great faith. And from what I can understand and from what I have in my study, since he's a centurion, he was a Roman, or he was basically
right.
Gentile.
That's true. And those are actually two very great, very good examples. One, James had mentioned, so great was faith, even Jesus acknowledged how great the centurion's faith was. And second, this woman's faith, so great that Jesus acknowledged that in both instances, the faith so great from people that were not, I guess you consider, God's people, but their faith was so great in this man, this foreigner to them, a Jew, that it became scripture. Imagine your faith being so great that it becomes part of God's word for other people to learn, other people to take an example from. Which brings me to my second point. First point was the love that Jesus has for everybody. And second one is the faith that this person had towards Jesus. So my second question to you is, what kind of faith do you have? Is your faith as great as this woman's? Or as the Roman centurion's? Or as many people we read here in the Bible? It's an answer that only you can answer yourself. Nobody knows that answer besides you and God. It's easy, I guess you could say it's easy, to put on a face of a good Christian. Put on the face of a faithful Christian. You can come to church Sunday morning, Bible class, the lesson, Sunday evening, Wednesdays. You could be, quote unquote, the good Christian or the perfect Christian. But for a lot of people, that's just an act, a play, a facade, what people expect of them. Only you yourself can tell what your faith is. How great is your faith? Now, as a Christian, our faith is tested constantly. Agreed? I mean, it's not easy. It's tested in many different ways. Whether it's temptations, trials, tribulations. Life is hard sometimes. Some people have it easier than others. But everybody's faith is tested from time to time. Now, are we one of those people when our faith is tested that we just give up? We just crumble and fall, or do we get up and keep going? I was told one time, like I mentioned before, we all struggle in our faith. When I first became a Christian, I became a Christian at a young age. I guess I was 14. I guess kind of young, you could say. Still don't know much. Still don't. But there were times, especially at that age, it's very hard being a Christian. I don't know if I would say it's harder than at any other age, but it's very hard. You remember being a teenager. Everything that happens. School doesn't make it easy. There was a point in my life where my faith was tested at one point. And I had a talk with my dad. Because he could tell something was wrong. He's like, he sat me down. He says, look, as a Christian, this was the first time my faith was tested. He says, as a Christian, this is going to happen. It's part of being a Christian. And I knew, I've been told the same lesson over and over that being a Christian isn't easy. But up to that point, everything was going great for me. But then, this happens. And my dad sits me down. He says, look, being Christian is not easy. There's going to be times where you're going to fall. But the problem isn't falling. Many of you have heard it before. The problem is staying down. You have to get back up. You have to keep moving forward. Because you're going to fall. Again, nobody's perfect. There was only one perfect person ever on this planet. That was Jesus. We try to be like Jesus. We try to imitate him. We try to keep moving forward. But we are only, what? Human.
But even with Jesus, we cannot forget that he was tried.
He was.
Hebrews 12 talks about, we have not suffered principally as much as he ever suffered.
Right.
It's a principle. And that should give us comfort. The greatest comfort is that knowing that death didn't hold him. And it won't hold us because we have the power of the gospel have faith.
That's right. And it's actually a great example. I'm glad you brought that up. Jesus was also tried, was he not? He was tempted as well. But did he ever falter? Did he ever fall? No, he didn't. But it gives us comfort knowing that if the greatest man to ever live was tempted and tried, it's going to happen to us. Any good, faithful Christian is going to be tried or tempted at one point in their life. Is going to have their faith tested. Let's drop down a little bit from Jesus to the apostles. The apostles weren't as great as Jesus, but they were human. But they were the apostles. They were people that were with Christ, who saw Christ's miracles, who heard Christ preach, who were there to see everything he did, who saw him resurrect, who saw him ascend to heaven. And even they were at times tested. Even they were at times tried. And even sometimes some of them even failed. But what did they do? They got up and they kept going. So the problem isn't being tempted. The problem isn't being tried. The problem isn't failing. The problem is not doing anything about it. The problem is...
You can finish it.
The problem is just not getting up again.
I think the point to make here is, as we've said, that Christ never faltered, but at those times where he was close to faltering, the Garden of Gethsemane, what was he doing?
He was praying.
And so, I think, as it says in 1 Thessalonians, or it might be 1 Thessalonians, if you read the Bible, you'll find it, but it says, in all things give thanks, basically pray without ceasing, is that you see Christ, he's at his worst, he's praying, he's talking to his Father. I think if, and I'll say for me, if I had a better prayer life with God, that I wouldn't feel as down as often as I was. And just, I think that might help all of us, that might help most Christians, is if when we got to that point, if we felt we were getting to that point, sitting our knees where we were, not, no matter where we were, whether we're how we felt we were, or at work, whether it makes us feel like we're going to be humiliated, if we are humiliated, being willing to hit our knees and pray.
That's right. Prayer is a very powerful thing. Sometimes I think we don't use prayer enough. I don't know how often you pray. I don't know if you pray in the mornings, pray at night, pray before you eat. You know, we're taught all those things. But prayer is a personal thing. It's your way to communicate with God. It's your personal line to God. The one person that can help with anything and everything. And a lot of times he does. Now, here's the thing where a lot of times people's faith is tested, or a lot of people are just brought down, is we expect an answer immediately, right? You know, somebody's sick in your family, somebody's dying. What do? You pray to God. God, please help. I'm begging you. I'm asking you. And sometimes God will. God does what he does. The person gets better. Or sometimes God doesn't. Or sometimes God makes you wait. It's been seen many times in the Bible where God doesn't immediately respond to a request of one of his children. We have Abraham. Abraham was promised, what was he promised? A father of many nations, around the age of 75. When did Isaac come along? He was about 100. 25-year wait, you can put it that way. God made him wait 25 years before he fulfilled that part of his promise. What else? Give me another example where God made people wait.
Lazarus.
That's actually a very good example. It's one of my examples. What happened there? He let Lazarus die. He knew Lazarus was sick, and what did he do? He waited 2 days. Now, why do you do that? Again, teaching a little woman, proving a point, the glory of God. But he didn't go right away. He waited. And there's sometimes reasons why God doesn't answer right away. And sometimes no answer is the answer, which is hard for us to understand. Now, again, as parents, who knows better, you or your child? A lot of times, child thinks they know better. And most of the time, it's not true. I'm not saying child isn't right from time to time. But who would know better in this case, me or my 2-year-old little boy. He wants to eat candy nonstop. I mean, if I let him, he would. But I don't let him eat candy nonstop. Why? Because I know as a parent, it's not good for him. He's going to get sick. But he doesn't understand that. He'll go up to me, he'll ask me for candy. He goes, "Dad, that candy." And sometimes I have to tell him, no. Now, yes, I am guilty. I'm a lot more easily persuaded when it comes to that matter than my wife is, and she lets me know it. But I don't just, the moment he tells me yes, I stop everything I'm doing to give to him. Sometimes I make him wait. Sometimes he doesn't get any just because he doesn't need it. Sometimes he needs to pick up his toys. There's many reasons why yes isn't always the answer right away. Sometimes you have to wait. And just like this woman, her faith was tested. Now, this matter is a lot more desperate. I want you to imagine. This is more for the mothers. Fathers, we love our children. But again, as I mentioned before, it's a different bond between a mother and her child. You know how they say in the wild, you don't mess with a mama bear? You never hear about papa bear, right? I'm talking about mama bear or mama lion. Why? Because mothers will protect their children to the death. So imagine your child's sick. You're desperate for help. You go to the one source and they tell you no. Maybe they don't tell you no. But they don't help you right away. And again, you ask for help. And again, they try to turn you away. Do you just give up? No, you plead and plead and plead and beg and cry and do whatever you need to. And that's what this woman did. She insisted. She persisted. And in the end, Jesus helped her. That's the way it should be for us as Christians. Our faith will be tested. Our faith will be rocked at times. Maybe our faith will be shattered. I've seen it happen. I've seen it happen both ways. I've seen where a person's faith is tested to the point where they walk away, can't do it anymore, don't want to do it anymore. And I've seen the other side. A person's faith tested so hard that they come out a stronger, better person. I mean, it's even mentioned. How do you test gold? How do you purify it? Through fire. How? Have you ever seen that process? It's actually very interesting. I looked it up one time. Look it up on YouTube if you ever get a chance. It's very cool. They put it through fire over and over and over and over. Not just one time, not just two times. Many times. You know when it's finally pure? When you can see your reflection in it. And that's when you have pure gold. But it's tried through fire many times and it comes out better at the end. Steel is tried through fire many times and it comes out stronger at the end. Your faith as a Christian will be tried and tested many times. And in the end, if you can get through all of that, if you can get up again, you will be stronger for it. What's the saying? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And it's very true to that.
Speaking of Lazarus,
yes,
it was 2 days before Jesus departed. Mm-hmm. Then when he got there, John 11, verse 17, then when Jesus came, he found that he had laid in the grave 4 days already. So he had been dead 4 days before Jesus rose from the dead.
That's right. So Jesus waited 2 days. He was dead for 4 days. So he made him wait. Again, to prove a point. It was a lesson. So, I saw Velton just walk by, so I have a few minutes. If you have any questions, answer concerns.
Hebrews 12, verse 11 says, "Now no chastening for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous." Or testing, you know, being tested.
Right.
It doesn't seem to be a good thing. "Nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them that are exercised thereby." You know, it's a fact that who enjoys looking forward to the test, whether it's in school, a test is just that, a test.
Right.
But after you take that test, if you exercise yourself, you can enjoy that peaceable fruit afterward. And that's part of our very existence. The whole idea that we would get through this life without ever being tested, and that our character would actually be strengthened without tests, it doesn't even make sense. True character will be tested over time.
That's right.
You know, Jesus did a lot of tests.
He did.
He did a lot of tests.
Yes, he did.
Some failed.
It's true. Stephen, last comment here.
Yeah, I was going to say that if you look at Matthew at the different times that someone calls Jesus the son of David, he always, he never addresses them or acknowledges them immediately. I think it's so interesting because it's like he's allowing those people to identify him as the son of David. And especially for the Gentile woman to identify him as that. In a crowd full of Jews who didn't necessarily believe that. And so it's like he's waiting. And I think a double benefit to that waiting is allowing people to identify him as who he really is. So I think it's cool that instance isn't the only time that he ignores something.
Right.
In each instance.
Good point. Never really thought about that. Thank you. All right, well, time is up. Thank you for your attention.